Thank you, Asa. He's scared now. There you go. Good, good. I got you, though. All right. So let's keep moving right along. And those of you that, I think pretty much everybody was here. You got about 4 seconds to make a good first impression. Dr. Kevin Hogan, who actually now, and you may want to turn that down just a bit, Asa, thank you, who now actually has, he's actually taken a professorship down in the Caribbean. Total lifestyle move. But you'll see this guy. He was the guy that called, he called Gore. He said Gore will lose the election when Gore came out of the box during the debate with Bush. I don't know if you guys remember that debate, but when Gore came out, he said, that's a very threatening, intimidating move. He goes, he just cost himself 10 million voters or something like that. But Kevin Hogan's one of the better, you know, experts on nonverbal. And so when he starts to say things like this, that you've got realistically about 4 seconds to make a good impression, I want to make sure that I am controlling those first 4 seconds. So we sort of briefly introduced the warm, you know, smile, handshake and all that, but we're going to go into more detail with this as we get to the next. The first impression is tricky because you have no control, again, over the receiver or the listener. It's a limbic response, and again, I encourage you to sort of understand from a learning and response standpoint. I mean, the limbic is this part down here. It's near the amygdala. It's in the reptilian part, the old part of the brain, and you're hardwired. I mean, when you walk into a room, I mean, you're taking in all these things that you're not conscious of, the smells, the sight, how high the ceiling is, and so forth, and you've been hardwired to do this simply because we need to know we're in the jungle as caveman, you know, and we'd say, oh, T-Rex, must run, you know, or you died. If you weren't able to pick up on these subtle cues, and so those of us, of course, we have the benefit of good genes, we survive that. People often describe it, you know, I just had some gut feeling. Oh, there was this saddest, I gave this lecture a few months ago, and I forget where I was, but wherever I was, there had been a string we'll just leave it at serial break-ins, okay? Many women had been attacked in their homes. And I was listening to this interview, you know, so they had a police chief on there, and basically they were talking about they had apprehended this individual who they believed was the culprit. And they were talking to these women. And these women were just like, I mean, they were regular people. And the MO of this guy, he would come to a house. He was dressed typically in a business suit and tie. And he would say, knock, knock, knock. Hey, I'm really sorry to bother you. My car has broken down just up the road. My cell phone battery is dead. I need to call my wife to tell her to come get me. I mean, this guy was good, right? I mean, all the things. He dressed the part. His wife, self, it's a legit story. Gets inside the house. Bad things happen. But it was interesting because they had two of the women and they have their faces blurred and they're interviewing them. And both of them, almost verbatim, said this. You know, there was just something about him, but then, when you looked at what he was saying and how he was dressed, I just would have never imagined. What was kicking in? Limbic system. Subconscious said, beware, beware. We don't know what it was, but something told those women. And of course, now they have regrets. And so be aware that you don't have any control over this, okay? Has nothing to do with your religious beliefs. Whether or not you're Republican or Democrat, a Tory, who cares? What you're selling. First impression has nothing to do with any of these things. It is simply a yes or no. In Moravian's terms, he would say a like or dislike cue. That's what you do instantly. I like this person, I don't like this person. Stephen, have you walked into a restaurant before, and before you even got 2 feet inside it, you're like, this place is going to suck. Have you ever had that experience? Yeah, of course we have. So we have to control this. The next hour is going to be about controlling that in your lobby, because you have got to control this, Dan. Again, we talked about these filters, but let's go a little deeper. Because now when people make a first when you're introduced to someone, Judy, they're saying, I give you higher status if I think you're more powerful. Okay? People that meet the President of the United States, you can like or dislike him, they often walk away with a very favorable impression. I hate his politics. Man, seems like just a genuine, nice person. You know, people said this, I met Bill Clinton, same thing. I did not like his politics at all, but I'll tell you right now, powerful individual. Part of that was being filtered because I knew he was President of the United States. Pretty big job. Am I attractive, unattractive, or somewhere in between? Like it or dislike it, man. I fall into the unattractive category, dude. So what I have to make sure I do is play up and say, I understand people do this, so I try to, you know, wear nicer clothes or do whatever I can do. People do judge you based on your clothes. Say they don't. Say they don't care. Whatever you want. Just talk to the experts. I'm just here to present the data. They judge you based on if you look like Mr. T. So if I come in with a bunch of rings and necklaces. And again, odors, tattoos and piercings. And we'll go a little bit more into odors because remember, it's not that you smell bad. Sometimes it's that you smell too good. Have you ever been in those rooms with a client? And you're like, whoa, man, turn on the exhaust fan, you know? Yeah, that's why we have exhaust fans, right? First impressions can be wrong, but they usually are not. Think about it, Stephen. You're really that good, man. That's the whole book of Blink. He was like, how do people know? You know, they just size up situation right away. They just have these impressions, and they're almost always right. It still doesn't remove you from critical and analytical thinking skills, Amanda, but it does say, hey, you know what? You're pretty good, and you size up somebody instantly. Hardwired to accept them. And Hardeep, this is important. If your brain is going to spend a lot of resources, and they put these people in these fMRI tanks, and they spin them around, and they have show them a picture of somebody they've never seen before, lots of activity going. So if your brain is going to expend that many resources on saying I like or dislike, yes or no situation, we then want to use that data. We don't want to just dismiss it, right? So your body, once you, it's hard to overcome it. You can. The case of these women, they're like, he just seems so nice, and, you know, felt sorry for him. What's wrong? So let's talk about that. First rules that I will give you, and certainly this is from a lot of research, we're going to show you some cool research, is you should dress about 10% better than your clients. That's a given rule in almost any interaction. So it varies from place to place because if you're in San Diego, California, you may have a more relaxed dress code than you would in North Carolina or New York or wherever. Let me caution you, though, one quick thing. Vets fall into this category. I want to be comfortable when I go to work. If I'm comfortable in what I'm wearing, I'll be a better doctor. Well, that's good, but you're missing the whole point of communication because you have no control over the receiver, the listener, the client. So are you giving any thought to what would make the client more comfortable? Have you thought about that? We're just making this all about us. I'm more comfortable just in a scrub top and jeans. Heck, so for most male doctors, that means a dress shirt, tie, dress slacks, white doctor's coat. That gives you the highest confidence rating. For female doctors, three-quarter length skirt or dress pants and blouse, white doctor's coats, minimal jewelry, short fingernails, a quarter inch is actually with the study. Don't overdress or underdress. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. The latest, and I think the coolest study ever, was done in Australia. This was an interesting study because what they found was, I don't know if you realize this, I'm sure you do, Hardeep, but one in three physicians in the United States is now Indian American, okay? In Australia, it's even higher. So they found that when an Indian doctor met with an Australian, Caucasian, whatever you like to call that, that they had less compliance and lower confidence ratings. The Indian doctor didn't score as well as their Australian counterpart, okay? So I thought this is a cool study because this Indian American said, well, we need to find out why. And so they started to explore, because obviously you can't change the way you look. You can't change the skin tone or your accent or things like that. But they could change what? Their dress. So they went through various dress, and they show, you know, the two extremes, one in the white coat and one in a very relaxed, you know, Australian sort of typical surfer or floral shirt and so forth. But they did a lot of things in between. And then they did 475, and I think, they did 475 patients, and they took them through four different impressions. Same doctor, they didn't tell them what they were doing. They just each time would say, what did you think about your appointment today? You know, how was the doctor? And so forth. All right. This is a fascinating study. But it's not limited to this. These are just a few of the studies. And I think if this is not in your notes, I'll be glad to send you. So, I mean, this is studied a lot. This is, you know, not like just Ernie's up here saying he wears a tie to work and wants you to wear a tie to work. This has nothing to do with it. I would not wear a tie if the study said it doesn't matter. The studies say this stuff makes a big difference. So I do it. I'm a scientist. You know, I want to make sure that I'm doing this. So, again, I encourage you to look at the research. Look at the science. I'm not here to dress. But anyway, here we go. 275 outpatients. Name badge, white coat, dress pants, dress shirts, traditional hairstyle were desirable. Undesirable things were sandals, blue jeans, an open shirt. They put them in golf shirts and a scrub top and non-traditional hairstyle. Again, they, you know, did their hair funny, you know, stick up or whatever. You know, I can't really do that. Those are all undesirable. So, for me, I'm a doctor, and I say, I want to be desirable, you know, because I don't look like Patrick Dempsey from Grey's Anatomy, and you know, my wife, of course, says, "Why don't you look like him?" You know, can't do it, honey. You know, unless we do a lot of plastic surgery, we don't have enough money for that. So, you know, I'm going to dress like the people say. You should be immaculate when you see a client. When you show up, you should be looking your best. If you're coming in there and you're just throwing on any old thing, it already sends a signal to that client. You don't really care. Your physical appearance doesn't matter to you at all. Because what your subconscious is saying, this person right here, she's put together. She's wearing nice clothes, nice dress slacks. It's a very pretty sweater combination thing you got there. Your hair's pulled back from your face, which is very important. I mean, you're telling me that this is good. I mean, she showed up here today to be a professional. And I appreciate that. And that's, I don't even know your name. I don't even know because you're not wearing your name tag. But that's, you know, I'm impressed. I don't even know who you are. I would assume you're a very successful person. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. But how you carry yourself is important. Doctor's coat is pressed and clean. Stephen, I pay for this. I pay for all our doctors. We send our coats off and they're, you know, dry clean professionally. Why? Because I know how important that is. If they're showing up with their sleeves are dirty, come on, we live in a dirty environment. If their fingernails, all this stuff, if their hair's not neat, Dave, it makes a difference. Well, I feel uncomfortable talking to people about this kind of stuff. If you are a practice owner and you're uncomfortable talking about this stuff, you need to absolutely reassess what it means to be an owner. Because as we're going to talk in the next hour, this is a direct reflection of your personality. I mean, the way when I walk into your hospital, how it feels, the tone, the mood, how people are dressed, it's simply an extension of the boss. Because the boss is the one who needs to be setting the pace. If the boss is shying away from these types of issues, then I'm saying that boss is not doing their job. Yes. Yeah, and we'll show pictures too. We wear them in traditional scrub pants, you know, and jackets. So scrub, yeah. And the reason we do that is because in the studies of nurses, when they put nurses in more relaxed street clothes, they have lower confidence rating. General public, again, America, I can't speak for Canadian, I'm sure it's the same, perceives the scrubs to be that of nursing field. So that's the same message I want to convey. And we have played around with it with khakis, and we've played around with golf shirts with that. And, you know, we keep coming back to this because that's what people seem to respond better to. And I'm not sophisticated enough to have all these studies. But when you look at the studies on human nursing staff, go back and look at them when they would put them in non-traditional, such as khakis, jeans, and, you know, tops and so forth. It's a good question, okay? Again, you just want to look as good as you can be. So how you and I would look different, but I'll tell you how scientific my staff is, because once you make this a priority, and that's a priority in my clinic, I'd say we want to look as good as we can. At least once a year, we have an image consultant come in. Dude, it costs nothing for this. You go down to your local mall. I live in Podunk. I live in a town of 722. So we go to Myrtle Beach, which is about 45, 50 minutes away. We go to the mall. We have an arrangement with a lady from Lancome at the Belk. You know, Belk is a store that you go buy stuff. You know, have perfumes and makeup and stuff. We have this lady from Lancome come, and she does our color charts. She tells us, you know, that's how we choose our scrub tops and all this stuff. That's how I know which things to wear for me, too. I'm blues. But I just take this seriously. It costs me almost nothing to do this, Dave. Why not? Why not? And I'll tell you the other thing, too. Me going, hey, Judy, I really think, you know, for your eyeshadow, they're going to be like, what are you talking about, man? I don't know the first thing about eyeshadow, okay? But now if it's a third party, non-threatening, you're going to hear throughout the day how I use other people. Videotaping was a first example. This now, you know, I hire all these people. Yes. Yeah, they looked at that. It was a white coat. So he says, what about the color of the coat? I'm not going to sit here and sweat you on this stuff. I mean, but if you look at the science, they studied a white coat. White coat is still pretty ubiquitous with doctor. You know, it's like nothing says doctor like a white coat. You know, so yes, sir. This study only looked at long sleeve. Yeah, I'm not a short sleeve fan because, you know, personally, I like to wear a coat if I'm going to wear a coat. Yes, it's whatever you want to do. I'd play around with it. I was recently working with a guy up in Canada, interestingly, and he was just totally convinced that he could wear a scrub top and jeans. I mean, he was just dead set. I said, humor me. This is back at OVMA. I said, humor me. 2 weeks, wear a tie, a white coat, do just like, you know, the studies show, and I want you to have your staff at the end of it have a little survey, and we just ask 5 simple questions on their impression of the doctor today, and then do it 2 weeks with your regular thing. The guy did 1 week of wearing his old scrub top and jeans. He said, I'll never do it again. And he's in some podunk, and I forgot the name of the town. It's a small, it's like mine, you know. Yeah, and he said to me when we first started this thing, he said, if I wear a tie, they're going to associate me with a salesman, and they're going to react negatively to it. One little thing, too, because I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but we do have a fellow triathlete here. All right, so the analogy I like to use is this. All right, Lance Armstrong. Everybody familiar with Lance Armstrong? Okay, he can kick anybody's butt in here in cycling. Nobody in here can hold a candle to this guy. He can kick all of our butts on a Huffy. Okay, a Huffy's like just something you buy at Kmart or Walmart, okay? So he can beat me on a Huffy. Maybe not you, but he can beat me on a Huffy. All right? So what I have to say is I'm never going to be Lance Armstrong. All right? I wasn't born like Lance Armstrong. I don't train as hard as Lance Armstrong. Blah, 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 not Lance. So if I'm going to play with Lance, what am I going to do with my bike? I'm going to have the most tricked out Cervelo I can get. I'm going to use every advantage, right? I'm going to have everything as aerodynamic. Because he's on the Huffy, the one thing I can do is control my equipment. Can't control my genetics, maybe. So you get the idea? I'm just saying, I don't care how good a communicator you are, try to make it better. That's what I do. So if these things apply, great, but I didn't want to spend a lot of time on the dress, but I'll be glad to talk to you more. Again, just look as good as you can look. You know, you should have full-length mirrors in your bathrooms. You should have full-length mirrors in your doctor's offices. You should have full-length mirrors pretty much any place you can put them around your hospital. I don't want to see myself at work. Well, you know, why are you showing up? I mean, really, why? Because your clients have to look at you, and it is sending an impression, like it or not, Stephen. So I have all these mirrors everywhere. I want to look at it. Just typical day. These are snapshots. This is what we look like at school. There's Dr. Rose. I mean, they pretty much do it, you know. Yes, Argyles are back, so whatever. That's how we look. Interestingly, in that study that I didn't bring out, you got a 15% higher confidence rating if you had a stethoscope around your neck. Call it a whatever you want to call it, but just if you put a stethoscope on, you know, regardless of everything else, you got a higher confidence just having a stethoscope. Even with the scrub tops. It's cool. You know, I encourage you to read the studies. When you enter the room, direct eye contact and a smile. I don't want your face buried in the notes. I want you to think in your mind, I am lucky to see you. Because here's the thing. Where do you live, ma'am? Where do you live? Yeah, or practice or whatever.
Longmont.
Longmont where? Colorado, of course. Everybody knows Longmont. Longmont, Colorado. How stupid of me. So you're in Longmont, okay? So if you walk into that room and you have any other thoughts other than, I'm lucky to have this client, you're wrong. Because here's the fact. Even in Longmont, Calabash, do people, are they forced by the state to come see you? Does somebody say, you will go see Dr. Ward or I'm going to blow your brains out? I mean, probably not, right? They're coming there of their own goodwill and volition. And they're going to spend their own hard-earned money. So I have to think, I am grateful to see you. I am thankful to see you. I am happy to see you. Because I am. Because without them, guess what? This profession is about this big. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, come on. It's dogs and cats and hamsters and gerbils and stuff like that. I mean, you know, come on. We've come a long way, baby. So I'm happy to see them. You've got to have that mind. Focus on the pet and address both the client and pet by name. You should be using their name. What have I been doing throughout this conversation? Using your name. You think that's just by accident, Dave? I've let you in on a big secret, right? So, and I know your gender. I can spot Gary. You know, he's got a mustache, so it's pretty easy to tell. So, you know, I grew a beard for that very reason, Gary, because I said, I want people to say, he's a guy, okay? Already happened with my daughter, so I've got to watch out, okay? Shake hands and shake paws. Here you'll see Chrissy just demonstrating. You'll see these pictures over and over again, and it's not by accident that we do this. Stephen, it's pretty straightforward. Anywhere I meet you, hey, good to see you, good to see you. And it's instantly down. I mean, it's right down because I'm connecting with you. We're creating intimacy, which we'll talk about more in just a second. You should be having this posture all day long. Yes, ma'am. Do I what? Do I encourage my technicians? I don't encourage them. I demand that they shake hands, shake paws. Shake hands, shake paws. Shake hands, shake paws. We'll talk about why that's critical. Yes. Every time you see them. Every time you see them. Yeah. You know, I wake up every morning next to the most beautiful redheaded wife. What do you think the first thing I do to that woman? Give her a big kiss. Now, I've kissed that woman for 21 years. All right? I'm going to keep kissing her as long as the good Lord lets me lay by her. So it's the same thing. Intimacy, connection, emotion. Yes. She says, so when you greet the client, what do you use their name? We use Mrs. Smith. I am Dr. Ward. When my wife is at the office, she calls me Dr. Ward. When I talk to the other doctors, it's Dr. Snow, Dr. May, Dr. whatever. Okay? Now, in private, my wife does not call me Dr. Ward. Okay? That's a whole different thing. Mm-hmm. I don't. I personally don't. She says, do you call them by their first name? I don't. Because if I use their first name, what am I saying? Use my first name. And I still want to keep a little professional distance there. Our rule is Mr. or Mrs. Yeah. And let me just be honest with you. We call everybody Mom and Dad. I mean, so it's at that level. So people get hung up. People have way, yeah, when you look at the experts, they will tell you right now, 7% is the words you're using. It's how you're saying it. You can say, hey, Mr. Dumbledore, you know, I can be offensive, but if everything else about me is egregious and fun, I'm going to tell you right now, I win every time. So don't get hung up. That's where we get that 7% blinder on. You know, it literally, the words you are saying have less impact than how you are saying them. So, you know, Dave, you know, Mr. Clark, you know, it almost makes no difference because it's still intimate. You know, yes. Ooh, boy. It's getting personal. He says beards are sinister. Yeah. Well, in case you hadn't wondered, I probably have looked into this pretty extensively since I do happen to sport a beard. They have. And in the past decade, it has become much more acceptable for males. Do you know why? Well, yeah, right. Hey, all right, Amanda, that North Carolina wit's coming through. We got him. He's probably from New York or somewhere. Yes, they said since the Gulf War I, when you started seeing more and more reporters on TV with beards, it's much different. Now, having said that, it must be neatly trimmed. Also, I don't know if you realize this, but almost 15% of all males now sport some form of facial hair in the United States. That's a goatee, a beard, so it's like much bigger than it's been in many, many years. Yeah, he's talking about you too, sir, you know, so Elon, watch out. So, no, I would disagree. And again, it's congruence of things. That's to say, all men with beards are sinister. You know, I would like to, at a triathlon, I'd show up and somebody, he's sinister, man. You know, I just can't pull off that vibe, you know. I have a beard for two other reasons. Number one, I have a very boyish face, but I have a weak chin. Okay, so this helps outline. I mean, yes, I'm freaky about this stuff. Okay, because I have a weak chin, and so it helps outline and frame my face better. So, there's, you know, I'm not Brad Pitt. I want to be, but I can't be. So go ahead. Husband and wife doctor team. Say, So they have the same last name. Well, I've been there too, Dr. Stacy, Dr. Ward. So. Actually hired an associate. She was with us for 4 years, whose last name was Ward. It's just bizarre. Just bizarre coincidence. And oh boy, let me just tell you, when she first came in, I had a lady. So Dr. Stacy walks in, and again, that's our only out, you know, Dr. Stacy. She walks in the room, and she introduces herself as Dr. Ward, because, you know, and she does this, and she says, I've heard about you. And she gets up and leaves. And she walks up front and she says, I will not see a doctor that wrecked a marriage. She assumed that my wife and I had split, you know, it had been some time, and took a lot of creative, you know, communication there, because she was like, and it made Dr. Stacy feel like this. She's like, no, I'm happily married, really. Really? Yeah, sure. You've got that beard. You're sinister. I don't trust you anyway. See there? See how it makes a nice little profile there? See, there's a reason to the madness. Maintain eye contact. Refrain from the notes and the record and the computer. Because when you make it about the computer, you make it less about the person. And doctors like to do this. They like to walk into the room with the chart in their hand or the computer as we do. And they sit here, uh-huh, yeah, all right. That's no good. You walk out of there going, huh? I mean, you know, I want to video these clients, because don't you think they're going, yeah, and then my throat hurt, you know, don't you think they're just like, you're not even listening to me. I was recently at a university speaking, and I always go down to the clinics, and one of their clinicians was down there, and literally, Dave, I did not put a timer on it, but I'm pretty good gauge of time. A lot of spin classes, you learn how long 60 seconds is. But nonetheless, I watched this clinician. He did not make eye contact, did not look up from his notes for at least 2 minutes. I mean, just sat there buried in the notes. And I'm sitting, you could tell the people were becoming increasingly uncomfortable. You know, just like, you know, the husband and wife kind of glancing at each other like, you know, what's he doing? Why is he, are we here? Hello? You know, it's kind of tough. So be careful with that. All All right? Assume a subordinate position and posture whenever possible. All the research supports that women like to be in a slightly dominant posture. So they want to have their eye level just above yours. I can't even talk to you guys on one-on-one without me lowering myself. And you see, you use lots of different tricks to do that. For men, of course, like Dave, you're very tall. This is why the stool is important, because it's a great equalizer. But even then, you probably have noticed yourself, you'll kind of slouch, cock your head to the side. You'll do things to drop your height. You probably do it already instinctively because you're a tall man. When you're a scrawny guy like me, it's not as hard. Okay? Seated is ideal. Now let's talk about this. Stephen, you a married man? All right, good. Happily married? There's only one answer to that. All right. So, there is. Now, I got a little trick for you. And this works in every situation. And people at restaurants hate me for this. But the next time you go out with your wife, do not sit across from her at a table. You ask to be seated beside her at a 45-degree angle. I do this every time. I was recently in Europe, and I had to sit at a table, and they wanted me to basically hold fourth court, you know, at this dinner meeting, okay? And so they had the table all screwed up. It was a long, narrow table, and where do you think they put me? In the middle. Yeah, yeah. So now I'm like, I've got no eyes. I mean, it's all messed up. So I had to say, we got to rearrange the table. I need either a circle or a square or something where I can kind of have more angles to work from. Because I can't work. You can't talk to somebody like this. You know, have you ever tried to do this? You know. So the next time when you're with your wife, think this. I got another little thing for you. Okay. 180 or straight across is confrontational. 45 degrees is conspiratorial. So that means we're conspiring together, we're working together, we're working against each other. And you can almost feel the difference, can't you? I mean, when you come in, and then if I'm talking to you like this, you know, it's very different than like this, you know? So just be aware. So everything in our exam room, everything is laid around these basic principles. So we always, the way it's naturally pulled out, it's going to be a 45-degree angle. I mean, you know, here's Julie, just, it sets it up. So make sure when you design your hospitals and when you look at the flow that you're playing into these things. So going back to dinner with your wife the next time, if you want to make it extra special and you really want to connect and communicate with her and let her know how lucky you are to have her, because Lord knows I don't know why anybody would marry me, I say, I want to use everything to my advantage. It creates intimacy right away. Experiment with your kids too. I'm amazed. You know, if you have children, make sure they sit to your right and left at the dinner table. Because then again, you've got a natural 45 degree. It's a problem there because you've got a space in between you, but you get the idea. Think about it. Okay? Straight on, confrontational, 45 degree, conspiratorial. Yeah. So I like to conspire. It's you and me against the world. All right? We're going to get this. All right. So we got that. What's up? Being seated also signals that you've got plenty of time to listen. And I don't have a chair, Asa. See, you could have got me a chair. So, if I come into an exam room, they've just seen the lobby. It's crazy busy. Cats hanging off the rafters, all right? And now you walk into the room. When you pull out that chair, do you mind just scooting over for 2 seconds? All right, actually, I can scoot this right here. These are probably connected. But let me just tell you, this is the coolest thing in the world. If I come over and I just say, hey, this slows down everything. You know, so I'm leaning forward, I'm doing lots of things too. I'm doing something with my elbows we're going to get to in just a second. But I'm doing lots of things now to focus on you. No matter how crazy it is out front, you are, as I said earlier, the center of the universe right now. You make yourself sit down. Make yourself sit down. There's a lot of other reasons for that. The other thing too is, it's a natural progression point. So when we're doing our workflow, I hate these things, when I'm doing our workflow, when we get up, what does this say? We're changing. Something is about to happen. We were just talking, and now we're going to go into action mode. So seated. All right? And you're a relatively tall guy, too. You know, you're taller than most of your female patients. So it's critical. And for women, you just come across warmer, softer, so all the right things. Yes? Yes. In fact, I'm doing an entire thing on the medical history this afternoon. Imagine that. There's a method to this madness. Each session is going to build, and we're going to talk more about that, okay? About what the technicians are doing, how we're getting the medical history, because you're right, they have a different communication skill and set and need than we do as a doctor. All right, again, nonverbal cue, stand up, time to go. Again, let's get back to Morabian. He says this. This is his research. So I've got to make sure the eye contact. Again, openness to the client. And let me tell you where I find most vets make the mistake, Hardeev, is they look down. They constantly are looking down. And that is why I will tell you right now, when we go through the thing, I don't ever have a computer in my hand or lap. I don't have a chart in front of me. There's another way to do it, the way we do it, because I want complete open. I want to say, I am here for you. Because who do they have the least amount of time with, Gary, during the interaction? The doctor. So I've got to play everything to my advantage. I've got to use the stool. I've got to be at a 45-degree angle. I've got to have open body posture. I've got to do all these things right on, or else they're going to go out there and go, he didn't spend any time with me at all. How many times have you been to the doctor or the dentist, and you walk in there going, it's like 30 seconds, man. Yeah. The average general practitioner spends 4 minutes doing the physical examination. Specialist spends 7. Dave, I have a daughter, and she has a complex medical problem. Okay, so she has an issue, so we've had to go to several specialists. And so, interestingly, our choice was Duke and UNC. I won't tell you which is which, but the first one we went to, the first top specialist, and they just happened to be for this condition in our state, which was a real blessing. There's one other in New York, but actually one of the guys taught the person in New York. So anyway, it's very small. It's a kind of a rare disease type thing. Anyway, so we go to the first person, and literally we felt like, what was that all about? Nothing. He did everything wrong. He did everything, including like slouching. I mean, I remember he was kind of sitting on the exam table doing all this stuff. I mean, it's just like everything, and I wasn't conscious of it, but we were just like, this is the biggest waste of time ever. We'll never go back. I'll tell you who it was offline if you want, but I would never recommend this person. So then we go to the next specialist. Completely different. Do you know how the person introduced himself, Stephen? Hey, I'm Dr. Such and Such. He shook my hand. He shook my wife's hand. He went over to my daughter and said, you must be, and I'm not going to use her name, you must be Miss whatever, and, you know, I'm so happy to see you. Then he did what? Pulled out a stool, he sat down, no notes, no charts, and he said the magic words we're going to talk about during the medical exam part. He said, he goes, well, I've already, you know, reviewed your record and why you're here. Didn't have to go through that again, which is very important. That session is very important because people always think, medical history, I don't understand that. That's boring. This guy nailed it. I will tell you, I will sing this guy's praises to the highest because this guy, and you know what? Here's the sad thing. They both had the same diagnosis. They both had the same poor prognosis. They both had the same treatment options. Same. What was the difference? Communication. 7% was spot on. So again, he did everything right. That actually, interestingly, this is a picture of a bit of a confrontation. So again, I'm using it and I can tell you this had a very happy ending. We just take pictures. I mean, these are real pictures. This almost turned bad. She had adopted a cat, had gone to another vet hospital, had brought into us another cat. Anyway, we diagnosed it with FIP or presumptive FIP, and you know, so you can imagine the fun that ensued with that. Yes. I'm getting there. She says, what's the deal with that? Yeah. I think we got a secret single back here. Yeah. All right. I was going to make it guys only, but since you ask, yeah, I'm going to tell you that. You are so good. You're so good. I have 15 minutes. Use your eyebrows. Use your eyebrows. If you've been watching me, and I've seen way too many ugly videotapes, one of the things that I have learned to do is I keep my face open by raising my eyebrows constantly. You know, there's this old saying, dance with your eyebrows, okay? But if you want to open your face up, make sure that you are absolutely keeping it wide open. Because it's really easy to kind of fall into a relaxed, serious, well, Mr. Hadiv, I'm so worried about your dog, you know? But it's sending a sinister look. And if you got a beard, you're just out of luck, man. So I've got to do everything. Yeah, I'm just going to shave the beard. Heck with it, you know? Come on, later on. No. See, you have a nice beard. See, it's nice and trim. See, it's nice. Yeah, if you have the Grizzly Adams beard, I think that's negative. Yeah. Plus, I mean, it just gets too much stuff caught up in it. So, smile. Hold your head up when you're talking. Pull your shoulders back. I'm also a personal trainer. And I don't take any money for this. I typically work with senior citizens. We have an aquatic center down in Myrtle Beach, and I drive down there a few times a week and just work with senior citizens that are struggling with diabetes, osteoarthritis, obesity issues. And a lot of these people, just like us, we carry a lot of tension in our shoulders. When you're sitting there throughout the rest of this conference, I want you to make sure you're constantly pulling your shoulders back. All right. Number one, this puts you in a great posture, and I'm going to talk now a little bit about what your arms and your elbows are doing. But pull it back helps loosen up, release some of the stress there, your lats, latissimus dorsi, you know. You want to make sure you're not carrying that all day long, especially if you're at a computer, people that are hacking it out on the computer. I know when I'm writing a lot, you know, I just have to keep rotating it back. But one of the nice things about rolling your shoulders back is it puts you in a naturally authoritative, confident posture, which is elbows out. Okay? And if you've been watching me, never or rarely do I have my elbows part. If your elbows are in, if your arms are in, it's submissive, it's unconfident. I'm not sure about what I'm saying. When your elbows are out, when your arms are away, it goes back to Coco. What do gorillas do? What's the classic pose? All right? Now, do gorillas walk like that because their shoulder muscles and joints are so they can't move their arms? There's a little bit to that. But the truth is, when you do this, it makes yourself look what? Bigger. Now, that can be threatening or intimidating, but also can make you very authoritative. Try this next time you're at the gym, Dave. Just sit around. You know, you work out. You know, you're kind of pumped up a little bit. See who's looking. I do it all the time. I was doing it this morning. I do it just to mess around. I want to see who's looking, you know? There's also something you can do, too. If you're trying to attract someone's attention, and it works almost every time, it's the double take. It does not work if you're on a date with your wife, okay? So don't even... But if you're trying to get somebody's attention, imagine yourself in your mind making eye contact with that person, regardless of whether or not they are. Okay, so you're sitting across from me at the conference, and you're looking away. But imagine in your mind that you're making eye contact. Stare at them for about 10 seconds or so. Look away. If they look in your direction in about 1 minute, within a minute, they find you at some level attractive. And I think that's pretty interesting. You know, it doesn't mean that you're trying to hook up, you know, because you're happily married, I'm happily married. But I do want to be attractive to my clients, because you don't want to be unattractive. You don't want them to say, I don't like you. So just test these things out. That double take is really interesting. Do it all the time at the airports. Okay, just see who's looking at you and who's not. Okay, elbows out. Where are your feet pointing? The young lady said. This is a classic one. All right. Next time you're talking to somebody, and let's say especially it's confrontational, because we tend to fall into these habits when we're like stressed out. So if I am talking to you, and hopefully we're at a 45-degree angle, so it's already hard for me to do this. Where my feet are pointing, and I'll try to do a more female type thing, where my feet are pointing are telling me where my mind is. Classic. Had a staff member come in not too long ago, and she wanted a raise. Okay, she was asking for a raise. And our performance evaluations are not tied with raises, so anyway, she had had not a great performance evaluation a month before. She had several things to work on. She was coming back. She thought she had made some improvements. I felt contrary. I did not think she deserved a raise yet. So as she's walking into the room, obviously, I'm into my office. She's very nervous because she'd called this meeting, right? Well, let's say you're me, okay? So I don't know if you can appreciate this, but she was doing this the entire time. Now, it just so happens that my door is right there. What was her body language telling me? I knew instantly she was uncomfortable. Now, had she been more comfortable, I would have said, she's assertive. She feels strongly about this need for a raise, that she's earned the raise. Do you understand the difference? But her body language, and she actually was leaning back in her chair, okay, and her foot was pointed almost directly at the door, not towards me. So women, if you're trying to impress a young man and you're out and about, make sure that your feet are pointed towards them, because that shows your focus. And it's amazing because your mind is where your feet go. Angelina Jolie, beautiful woman. Do you agree, Stephen? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he says. You got it. And I got one for the ladies in a second. But Angelina Jolie, in 2001, was filming in Mexico. And she was going to have probably the busiest day I can ever imagine. So she wraps up her filming in Mexico. And she gets on a private plane. And she has to be in L.A. this night for an event. So she gets out. And, of course, it is just literally one of these things where if we are 1 minute behind, we're going to miss this. So the entire day, so she flies, she gets into L.A., she meets up with her brother, and if you've ever seen her brother, you're going to understand how this story plays out. Angelina Jolie's brother is a very interesting character, to say the least. Appears to be very interesting. So, because this is being taped, and I don't know the person, but he seems very energetic. Okay? How can we put it? Min Pen. Okay? Fox Terrier, kind of? Clear. So, as they get into the car, the traffic is crazy in L.A., and he's like, we're not going to make it, we're not going to make it, not going to make it, not going to make it. Meanwhile, they're trying to finish her hair and her makeup and all this stuff, right? And so, According to the driver later, you know, the tension in the car was just palpable. The makeup people were saying, we just couldn't get anything done. I mean, you know, this guy's just negative. We're not going to make it. So as Angelina finally, they get there, and literally, as luck would have it, they turn out right on time. The driver reported that she said, everybody calm down. We're on time. We're going to be great. This is a very important night for me. Let's pull it together. Inside, I am sure, because what you're going to find out, I'm sure she was just a knot of tension and butterflies and anxiety and so forth. Okay? She steels herself. She says, I'm probably feeling like you know what on the inside, but the world is about to see me. They open the door for her. She steps out, feet pointed right down the red carpet. She gets out, elbows by her side, just like this. And she freezes. She looks calm. She's looking into the Oscars. She shows up that night and wins the Oscar. Now, I can tell you that that performance on the red carpet did not win her the Oscar. But it shows you that if you're in control of your body posture, of how you feel and how you're... People around the world didn't see her as, oh my gosh, you didn't know that she had been in Mexico and all that. You didn't know all this stuff. You just felt this woman is in total command. Another great view, speaking of Angelina Jolie, is to watch Ocean's 11. And to watch Brad Pitt and George Clooney in that film. Because guys, those guys have got it going on. That entire movie is a study in relaxed and confident and authoritative and declarative posture. My wife likes this movie, Dave, and it's not because of the plot. George Clooney commands respect. George Clooney, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm constantly saying, look at him. He's overweight. I mean, he's nothing. What's so special about him, you know? It's how he carries himself. He's got that factor. So you want to make sure that you've got that. So watch Ocean's 11, okay? All right? So watch movies like that. And then be conscious. So, Stephen, hopefully what you'll do after these two lectures is you're going to start to be conscious of how people are doing and what they're doing. So you'll be more critical of me. Relax your body. Relaxing your body is critical, too, because, again, like that men pen, you know, if you're going into that exam room and you're all jittery and nervous and tense, it shows. I mean, tightens your lips are drawn back to the side, all these little subtle things, you know? And so you want to make sure you're feeling relaxed. Do you know why I have our doctors and staff enter the room with a big smile? I have another dirty little secret to tell you, Stephen. It's not just because it's a good idea to have a smile, because it is. But what happens when you take a smile? What did I just do, Gary? You have to inhale, because that's a natural response. So if you walk into that room, you are going to inhale, and you're going to have this big smile, and it's going to calm you. Because what happens when you hold your breath for just a moment? What happens to your heart rate, Gary? Steve? Your heart rate goes down when you hold your breath. That's okay. That's all right. So it's going to slow down. You're going to get relaxed. You're going to get oxygen to your brain. Okay, hopefully to your brain and to the rest of your body. So that's why you want to do this. So make sure you take a breath before you go in. The busier you are, the more time you should take prepping yourself to get into it. Yes, ma'am. Oh, good point. She says, so do you tailor it to the client? Well, number one, you've got to be pretty good at analyzing and assessing people quickly. Assuming you know that person, yes and no. I mean, mirroring, which is really what you're getting at, what the experts would say, mirroring is very limited, because if they're timid and shy and you begin to mirror those things, while there is value to getting in sync with people, and I will use it sparingly with some confrontations, I want people to be more authoritative. Having said that, I don't want you to get the impression I get in there and go, well, howdy, Julie, good to see you. Woohoo! That was a wonderful day, isn't it? That's not how it's going down at all. I mean, it's literally, and I can do this all the time, hey, Ms. Smith, good to see you. Oh, and Scooter, bless his heart. I'm from the South, so everything's bless his heart. All right? So, you know, that's how it is. People want to, again, make this more showy and whatnot. I'm saying you got to find your own little thing. But the problem is, when you make all these other, you're not making eye contact. You know, you're glancing away. You're not being authoritative. You know, your elbows are in. Your feet are pointed towards the door or out. I mean, all these things are subconscious cues that you can control. Very easily. I mean, it's like, and the cool thing is you're here, now you're going to be aware. You know, you're going to be aware of these things, and hopefully it'll be better. Even if you just have one or two, it makes a big difference. All right, analyze your voice. Doesn't everybody like to hear themselves on their answering machine? You need to get comfortable with this. You need to absolutely, the way I started today, before videotape, back in the day, I thought it was the coolest thing ever, those micro cassette recorders, because we had gone down from the big recorders. Get a micro cassette recorder, put it in the room, turn it on, you get 45 minutes per tape, so that's one or two appointments, and then go back at night and listen to yourself. Get used to your voice. Understand your voice. Only by hearing can you change it. It's like the videotaping. You know, people say, I don't sound like that. I mean, I don't look like that. I don't do that. Proof's in the pudding. And it is, I mean, my wife and I spent countless hours listening to tapes, just refining the message, Hardeep, just making sure that I was on point, that I wasn't being too tangential, that, you know, I was actually being efficient with my communication. I'm not saying you have to go to those extremes, but Stephen, if you would once a month videotape yourself for just a few months, that biofeedback would be you'd be a transformed person. You'd be a different person, you know. Again, when people are angry, don't match tones. It's really simple to do. I can't believe you missed this whole thing, and now I had to spend $1,000 at the emergency clinic, blah, 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 blah. And you then, your heart rate is going up. And as I said earlier, now all your tone and your rate of speaking and your inflection, everything goes up, and now you want to match it. And you're like, no, Mrs. Smith, you're totally misunderstanding me. What did your voice just say? The tonality just said, I'm nervous, yeah, whatever. I mean, there's so many things that can go on. So when you are... And I know I'm getting a little bit ahead because we're going to talk some about this later, about confrontation. But when you are in confrontation, you need to be much more relaxed than the person across from you. I mean, that is the key to this whole thing. The whole key that we're going to talk about this afternoon is just making sure. And a lot of it is going to be built on what we've talked about today. Get physical. Let's talk a little bit about that in the last couple of minutes here. Bottom line is this. We are in a healing profession. To heal somebody, what does that conjure up? Does it conjure up remoteness, distance? Does healing conjure up sterility and coldness? Does it conjure up any of those things in your mind? Healing. No. What does it say? Warm, caring, friendly, all of those things. Intimacy is critical. And intimacy is a word that's hijacked because instantly people think I'm talking about someone Playboy. That is not intimacy. That's the absence of intimacy. That's the antithesis. We're talking about making an emotional connection that means something. And the best way to start it off is physically, because here's the barrier. This is it. All right? Now, until I cross over to the next stage, this feels pretty weird to me, okay? Now, instantly, though, if I do this, I mean, I can come around like this, and it feels different, just me touching him, okay? It didn't feel weird, but it felt weird a second ago, man, you know? So when I'm trying to connect with a client, happy, mad, good, bad, whatever it is, I'm going to make sure the first thing I do is touch him. Now, I'm going to give you another little secret, okay? And it's called the double hander. Now, Bill Clinton is the master of this. And those of you that have met Bill Clinton, I mean, you know, he touches you and it's like magic. But he does some simple things that he had been taught and learned over the years. And he does a double hander. All right? Now, there's two double handers. Hardeep, stand up here for me, please. And I'll have you positioned this way so that we can show everybody. Okay, we'll stand right over here. Like this. Okay, now we're going to greet each other. Typically, I'm going to be in a seated position, but this is going to work for me. Okay? So we come in. Forget the alpha male thing because I'm just trying to connect. So I'm going to be more at an upper. So... when I come in, if you do a single handshake, that's pretty good. But already it feels empty. It's really formal. It's kind of stilted, too. It's not, you know, it's like what I do. Hey, good to meet you. You know, nice to see you or whatever. Now, when you do the double hander, what I want you to do is don't do this, okay? Don't do this, all right? This is like a way dominant alpha male. This is like, you might as well go, hey, man, good to see you. Now I'm going to kick your butt. You know, all right. The two hands on the hands is putting him in a very submissive, I mean, that's I'm dominant over you. So what you want to do with your left hand when you come in is lightly touch the elbow. And this is where Bill Clinton is the master. Because they said Bill Clinton, well, can I just do a little Bill Clinton joke? I've got 2 minutes. Hey, so give me just 1 second, all right? Bill Clinton, okay. All right, if you gave $100 to Bill Clinton's campaign, you got this. If you gave $1,000 to Bill Clinton's campaign, you got this. If you gave $10,000 to Bill Clinton's campaign, you got this. Okay. If you wear a blue Gap dress, wait, no, that's a different thing. So what I want you to do, and they actually, I mean, Bill Clinton, this is very true. What I want you to do is when you take that hand, I want you to lightly touch on the elbow. And it's very natural. So for me, I'd come and say, hey, let me see. Hey, Dr. Sandy, good to see you, man. Because, well, you both can't do it. Then it gets really weird, you know. Then it's a dance, you know. So And some people will try to do this. You've got to be assertive. The way I do it, Stephen, and it sends a subtle cue to them, is I'm already extending. And I, as I told you, I couldn't do it without a wind-up, because basically I'm going to come in here and I'm going to take control of that situation. Okay, thank you, Hardy, very much for doing that. Thank you very much. He's a good handshaker. He has very nice hands. So I want you to do the double hander. I want you to touch that. All Americans accept anything from the elbow down and a pat on the shoulder. You're not in any kind of trouble, you know. Even in California, you won't get sued for that, okay? I promise you. That's what people come with. When we're explaining, give the why. Give the why. Don't just say, this is what we're doing. Give the why. All right? So you've got to do that. Don't lecture to clients. It's not a lecture. You know, it's not even a presentation. It's a conversation. And that's conspiratorial. That's different than, and we'll talk about that. No consults. I don't care what they say. It's the most important thing ever. I heard that feeding them your food will cause brain cancer. You know, hey, that's a really good concern. Let me explain to you why that's not true. Okay? Visual aids, written discharge instructions, blah, blah, blah. If you focus on communication, your compliance goes up. Your staff feels better about themselves. You feel better. I mean, I love being a veterinarian. I love being in the exam room. I love talking to clients. You know? I mean, I truly do. This is what I am. I'm a veterinarian. That's all I am. And I love to be able to go in there and talk to them. And more importantly, I love to help them help that pet. So thank you guys so much. You've been just super, super nice. Welcome reception at 10:40. We've got a little break. And then after lunch, we've got leaving work on time. Number one cause of stress and burnout. And the reason we don't have retention is because we keep people too late. I'm going to talk a lot about that. Medical history. And then finally, when clients say those dirty things. Thank you very much, Asa. Sorry.